Hello and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 1985, King of Rock by Run-DMC. Run-DMC was an American hip-hop group from Hollis, Queens, New York City. Founded in 1983, they're regarded as one of the most influential acts in the history of hip-hop culture. Pioneers of the new school hip-hop music, they were amongst the first to highlight the importance of the MC and DJ relationship. King of Rock is their second studio album. With the album, Run-DMC expanded their musical palette, adopting a more rock-oriented sound, with several tracks prominently featuring heavy guitar riffs. The song Roots Rap Reggae features Yellow Man and was one of the first hybrids of rap and dancehall. King of Rock was released on January 21st, 1985, by Profile Records, produced by Russell Simmons and Larry Smith, and features Joseph Run Simmons on vocals, Daryl DMC McDaniels on vocals, and Jason Jammaster J. Mizell on turntable and vocals. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our reviews for copyright reasons, but on our blog at johnscow.com, you'll find links to King of Rock on Spotify and YouTube, so you can follow along if you'd like. Track 1, Rock the House. This is basically an overture.
Yes.
Gives you a taste of what to expect. I liked all the percussion.
And so many came in and took this, you know, like so much of the Beastie Boys sound.
They actually say sure shot.
Yes. This is a lot that the Beastie Boys would just fish out of this album and make into something else.
Beastie Boys took that directly. After all of the modern hip hop we've reviewed, this one was a trip.
Yeah.
To see where it all went back to.
Right.
And they were new school in their day. They were innovative in their day. It just really shows how the genre has evolved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it evolved really quickly if you think about it.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised we picked this one, not like Raising Hell or Tougher Than Leather.
I wanted to go back to like the first one where they, you know, brought in the guitars. Track 2, King of Rock, the title track. This is iconic.
Yeah.
Great groove, great guitar samples, love the cowbell. The rap style is so simple, but so effective.
For the most part, it works, I think. There's some tracks of this where it's kind of like a yeesh.
It's very dated, sing-songy, especially, again, given how much nuance has been brought into it since then.
But this one in particular, man, this just blows your mind.
Yeah.
It's pre- Rage, pre-Beastie Boys.
Right.
I mean, this is like a rap version of The Clash, if you think about it. The video is crazy, too. Like, they're stepping on Michael Jackson's glove.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Larry Bud Melman.
And one thing I really took away is how much the Beasties borrowed from them.
Yeah. In fact, I think it's like the same door they kick in that they did in the Right Fight for Your Right video.
Mm-hmm. But I like how tastefully the guitar is pulled out and brought in throughout the song. It's not just there all the time.
I can't even tell what it is they sampled.
I don't know. I think I'm going to say Eddie. Although 85, maybe not.
Who knows? Huh. That's the one thing. They really kind of mix it up. It's kind of like how a lot of sampling is done now for copyright reasons that you speed it up or mix it so much that you can't tell what it is that you're sampling unless you've really got an ear for it.
And that was the whole art of sampling, was to use a sample in a way that disguised what it was and brought something new and was creative and really did make something new out of it.
Well, the golden age of sampling came like right after this, when they weren't doing that, when they were just taking...
Well, I think that's what killed the art of it, you know. In the early days, or in the early rap, this and before, you really couldn't tell who was sampling what.
The copyright laws really killed it.
Well, I think the copyright laws, if that's indeed why they did it that way, turned it into an art.
Yeah.
You know, it forced them to be more creative and more subtle with it. Then you have fucking, and I'm going to just blame him, Vanilla Ice. Because he's the first one that I remember who just blatantly used a sample.
And, I mean, you know what? It's funny that we had such outrage for things like that back then, you know, like Milli Vanilli and stuff. And now it's just kind of like, that's so tame, you know, all of that. The irony is Vanilla Ice wound up buying the rights to Under Pressure.
Well, no, he ultimately gave the Queen a credit. I think that was one of the first cases where they had a hip hop artist had to give another artist credit because of a sample they used.
They were suing him for so much money, and he found out that it was just cheaper to go and buy the rights. And it's kind of how he's made a lot of his fortune, actually, because
Oh
he
wow.
owns the rights to Under Pressure.
Okay, interesting. And just to call it out, yes, Zeppelin got sued by Willie Dixon for the Lemon Song, so you can call that sampling too if you want.
But albums like Raising Hell and Polly's Boutique, and I mean, to actually secure the rights for those, the albums would have cost millions to have made
Right, of course.
if you were following the copyright laws, and they can't be made again.
And
Kind of
that's
sad.
where a constraint makes something an art. Using a sample subtly so you don't run into copyright issues. Because, again, I don't know if Vanilla Ice was the first to use one. Obviously, he's just the first I remember. But that opened the door to Puff Daddy.
I think he was the most popular to have done it, because like
Probably.
the Beastie Boys, they
Yeah.
had like Beatles samples and
Right.
Jimi Hendrix samples. You
True.
knew what they were, taking stuff in a loop and putting it down. I mean, that's what sampling really was, because it was they were just taking those records and rapping over them and using, the motion to it, to get it back to go where you want it to go.
Well, that's why they use things like the Hallelujah Break, because no one knows what it is, but until it became iconic on every fucking rap record. Back to King of Rock. I did think the ending went on a bit too long.
I feel like there's a lot of these that they could have cut scaled down a bit.
On to track three, You Talk Too Much. This is my pick for weakest.
Same here.
The groove is very, very 80s in a bad way, as are the synths. The lyrics are really cheesy. It's way too damn long at almost 6 minutes. And the nagging wife line was incredibly sexist. Even for
It's,
85.
I mean, it's a single joke told repeatedly for like 6 minutes straight. I mean, so yeah, we get it. Like, they do a much better job in the next album with You Be Illin, where there's a bunch of different jokes packed in there. But here are just like, yes, we get it. They talk so much, and that they're like a woman. Ooh. And I'm not sure if the serious tone to the music is meant to contradict, or if there just wasn't any real thought put behind it at all. It's kind of amazing that there are so many writers credited with the song to have such a very simplistic song.
I didn't get really a serious tone from the music. It was just kind of very cheesy 80s pop.
Yeah, it has like this serious, like they're getting down to business kind of tone. And it's like you're just saying the dude talks too much. That's yeah, we get it. We got it about 4 minutes ago.
Yeah, exactly.
We're good.
Track four, Jam Master Jammin'. Great kick and snare sounds. Love the groove. Love all of the sounds. It doesn't need all the vocals. It would have been better if it was just Jay showing off for 4 minutes and
You
20
might
seconds.
be got a point there. I mean, I like the beat. The rap isn't too bad. I like this is a little bit more rock mixed in with this one too. It might be We Will Rock You, I can't really tell. But there's something there. It's pretty cool.
But yeah, I like the panning of the distorted synth and the guitar. There's a nice build. But I just wanted Jay to go off more and to have less
Yeah.
vocals.
Yeah, maybe an instrumental would have been better.
Track five, Roots Rap Reggae featuring Yellow Man. Love the groove on this one. Love the bass sample. Nice to
Just
hear some dance hall.
mind blown. Was not expecting this track. I'm not sure if you're familiar with their later albums than this.
Love how Run's style mixes with the dub groove.
Yeah.
This very kind of 4x4 straight rap style over this, reggae dancehall kind of groove.
I mean, this isn't my strongest, but it's definitely in the top three of the album.
Track six, Can You Rock It Like This? Another one that's very 80s, but I like the contrast between the guitars and the synths. Fun groove. Like the chord changes in the chorus, the Rodney Dangerfield reference was nice because I feel like as a culture we've forgotten him.
Although seeing Brendan Fraser, I said if they want to do a biopic of Rodney, that's your guy, man.
And I have to wonder if the mix of drum machines and distorted guitar that they used influenced industry at all.
I don't know. Maybe.
I feel like this may have been like a door to industrial.
It has a new wave feel to it. So it feels like they're looking at different things to mix rap with. You know, they've done rock.
Yeah.
You know, they did harder rock. They just did regular rock. They did reggae.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, going for the new wave look. Kind of has a very Prince, you know, Morris Day feel to it, though. Yeah. So you kind of think that's what Prince was going for, too, in a way, without the rap.
Prince was more of like funk rock.
True.
You know, we talk about, you know, Peppers and Faith No More mixing rap and R&B and funk. They were kind of following from Prince.
But I think he also had a big new wave influence on there, too, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just that keyboard hook from 1999.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was of his, that was of the time.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly ahead.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Track 7, You're Blind. This is my pick for favorite. Love the groove. Love the guitar samples. Great bass sound. Runs rap in this one reminds me a bit of Chuck D.
Yeah.
I think I was also very influenced by them.
I felt it was a bit like Talk Too Much, but I think there's some more redeemable qualities to this. I like the chorus there.
I like the, I'm calling it a harmony when they both say you're blind. I mean, they're speaking, so it's not really a harmony, but just the way their voices go together.
Yeah.
Track 8, It's Not Funny. Love the massive kick sound on this one. The laughing sample is great. They took Eddie Murphy saying, very funny, motherfucker, and just pitched it down.
Could have been a bit shorter, I think.
Yeah, it's a lot of the songs do go on a bit.
But this one, if you're going to have the one sample repeated, 5.5 minutes of one sample.
Yeah.
You know, they could have, they needed like another song, it felt like. You know, they could have cut some of these down and had something a bit stronger and maybe had an extra song on here.
And to be clear, they cut out the motherfucker because they were always fully G-rated. I liked the anger in the vocals, and there's this really nice build in the middle. And I like all of the variation that Jay does with the sample. Track 9, Daryl and Joe, Crush Groove 3. Love the groove. Like all of the scratching in the intro. I like how Jay changes up the music during it, and how he kind of solos between the verses.
Yeah, this one's my pick for strongest because it feels like they kind of get proggy on us here.
Yeah. That ending should have gotten boring, but Jay keeps it interesting by throwing in all these different sounds and samples.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like a Keith Emerson on a turntable thing. It's crazy. And then there's like this proggish progression that just comes from out of nowhere with the keys and then it goes into this like Sanford and Son theme kind of thing. I mean, people have sampled the Sanford and Son theme.
Oh yeah, it's iconic.
But I think they did it so you can't really tell what it is exactly.
They cut off the motherfucker, but they give you enough so that you can tell what it is if you know the reference.
Yes.
So I'm like, wait, what is that from? Who said very funny motherfucker? I had to Google it to remember that it was Eddie Murphy. Because they pitch it way down.
Which special was it?
Raw.
Raw? That makes sense.
The iconic one.
The rap feels also more energetic on this last one, too. Mm. So even though it's the longest track, they might have been going for a Herbie Hancock thing. Mm. But yeah, definitely my favorite of the album.
So do you recommend it?
Ooh, tough call, honestly. I thought for sure I would. I was kind of on the fence, but there's some of those tracks in the middle are a little like, I'll still recommend it, though, because I think there's some really high points here. Like, I mean, Roots Rap Reggae.
Yeah.
And the title track, too. Just fucking great.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. This was the origin for so much that came after. They were so incredibly influential. It's a bit dated, But just to go back and see where so many later icons got it from was kind of mind-blowing.
It's kind of this crazy all-star team. There's like Russell Simmons. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, Rick Rubin.
Yeah,
there's
Rubin was involved with the writing of the here. Films. Yeah. And that's it for King of Rock. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing Toy Matinee's eponymous debut and only album. They were kind of a sort of prog supergroup of like session pop session guys. It's a very interesting story. We'll get to that next week. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.